This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
My name is Jeff Sandu and welcome to Tech Talk. Over the past few weeks, you may have heard Digi, Deco, Gamuda and Common Ground talking about the VIP program with MDEC. It's the value innovation platform that's on mdec.my/VIP and how it's been driving them forwards in their digital transformation journey. A large part of that platform is through rainmaking innovation. And here with me today is...
Hi, I'm Jordan Schlepf. I'm a partner at Rainmaking.
Now, Jordan, welcome back to the show. We started the series with you and MDEC, but we didn't really get enough time to dive deeper into your mind about the situation here in Malaysia and how are you operating. So let's start with, who are you guys?
Yeah, so Rainmaking is, we're a global company now that we focus on a few things. We've got 11 offices around the world, just to give you an idea. It started with Rainmaking Ventures, which was our own company building. So me and my partners are serial entrepreneurs, and we basically built 28 of our own companies. So a third of those have been exited, including an IPO. A third of them still operate with external management, and then a third of them didn't work out and failed. But ultimately, we were entrepreneurs who had built multiple companies for ourselves in different industries and luckily done quite well out of it. Off the back of that, we wanted to give back to the entrepreneurship community and help entrepreneurs and founders. So we set up a company called Startup Bootcamp, which has now become the world's second largest accelerator network, which is industry-focused and multi-corporate collaborative. So this is where we'll look at, say, fintech, insurtech, logistics, digital health, transportation, and then put a program with 6 to 12 corporates attached to it for that industry, for that region. And these days, we have 20 programs around the world. We've invested in over 460 startups. Our survival rate is about 78%.
Wow.
So completely turning the Harvard Business School research of 75% of early stage ventures fail.
It's the other way around.
Yeah, it's the other way around. And that's from 2010 when we first started doing this. So that's over 460 startups since 2010.
Many things have changed.
Yeah. So we have the Global Accelerator Network. We do some co-working, but that's more of a strategic asset as opposed to a business model for us. We don't really see the rental yield or co-working as a great business model, but we have five spaces around the world, about just under 1 million square foot and sort of 2,000 entrepreneurs underneath our roofs. And then finally, we get into our Rainmaking Innovation, which is our corporate innovation piece.
And here in Malaysia, you're supposed to partner up with MDEC on their value innovation platform.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, very much in tune with what you would do globally as well?
Yes. So the value innovation platform is something that elsewhere we would call an applied tech lab.
Ah.
It's the same thing, but essentially that is about finding strategically aligned, commercially focused pilots with growth stage startups and a particular large organization. So think of it as outsourced R&D. So it's cheaper, faster, and a hell of a lot de-risked through this structured, proven process that we run than, say, M&A or investment or doing it yourself. So traditional R&D or traditional product development, in-house product development. So it's tapping into the fact that, you know, $130 billion was invested in early stage startups last year. That's not your money as a corporate. How do you tap into that, collaborate, and sort of get this collaborative growth? So where the result is greater than the sum of the parts, and tapping into this global startup ecosystem to get a genuine win-win with the startup and for yourself.
There are a lot of, you know, similar-ish type of programs that have been around in the region. We see, you know, accelerator programs, you see the hackathons that are run by corporate firms. They do it themselves. And instead of, you know, partnering up with guys like you, how different is it, or how unique is it, or what's the benefit in terms of, you know, getting involved with guys like Rainmaking Innovation, or, you know, being part of the VIP platform and seeing the potential it brings? Because it's really just, you know, stepping outside of the bubble that you would be in, right?
So on the first point, you've got to understand, well, what are your objectives? The Value Innovation Program is really focused on commercial impact to your business. So if you're engaging with a startup accelerator or a hackathon, it's mainly around culture and mindset shift. It's about different things. It doesn't really make you more money, right? At the end of the day, does it impact your P&L? So Rainmaking's philosophy is one that if it doesn't make you money at some point, it's not innovation, right? And innovation is anything but business as usual. But within that, it's like, what are you trying to achieve and where are you in that stage? So hackathons and accelerator programs do have their place and they can be quite effective. But it's about what stage are you in journey and what are you trying to do with your organization? The truth, though, unfortunately, is, you know, corporate startup engagement, corporate startup collaboration, corporate startup. I mean, you could barely move. You can swing a stick and you're hitting, bumping into this stuff every, like, on the street corner. It's, it surrounds us. We're drowning in it. And most of it is utter noise. It is utter nonsense. It's sort of, how do I describe it? It's like, you know, you bought the new set of trainers, you're going to the gym, you're not working out, but you're hitting the sauna pretty hard and you're feeling really good about it. You're surrounded by the music.
You take a lot of photos on Instagram.
Yeah. But you're going, well, why am I not losing weight? Why am I not getting fitter? And it's because you're not doing the hard work that matters. You know, the truth around this stuff is like, depending on what your goals are, you have to have the right tool for the job. So yes, you can play tennis with flip-flops. It's like, it's not great. You know, put on a pair of trainers, tennis shoes.
Yeah.
So it's like, you can do it, but suboptimally. So again, like hackathons to me, a lot of people mistake hackathons about idea creation. Now, as a mechanism, it's terrible for ideation. It's not designed to maximize for ideation. And furthermore, corporates, when they start getting involved with hackathons, they tend to over-egg the pudding here. So what I mean by that is they'll do a hackathon and for some unfathomable reason, doesn't matter how many times you tell them, please, 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 it's not about picking a winner. They feel compelled to pick a winner.
It's like an ROI at the end of the day.
It's like, oh, we have to pick a winner. And then they pick a winner. And then like they've picked a winner. And they're like, oh, great, it's a winning idea. Right? Bear in mind, it's like 48 hours with a bunch of people like who haven't slept and have drunk too much Red Bull. And so they're like, oh, we picked a winner. 6 months passes, 9 months passes. Right, what do we do with this hackathon winner? And then eventually they feel this sort of pressure to somehow write a big check to sort of implement it or do something with it. And it's like, guys, it's not what it was meant for. You've taken it too far. Like, it's really good for awareness building, for, you know, inspiration, for showing how, you know, different ways of working and just being exposed to startups and entrepreneurs and the passion. And that can unlock a greater sort of culture and mindset shift within the organization, sort of willingness to move. It's sort of, you know, gets it rolling roughly in the right direction.
We're young. We have the right ingredients, you would say, to move to a next step?
100%. I think there is a scenario where you don't need to make the mistakes of other people. I think you can just get it right. Now, I say that with the caveat of an innovation mindset by definition is one where you have to take a portfolio of approach. Because we're getting into the world of uncertainty. It's kind of none of the, if we all had the right answer and there was this right certain path, I wouldn't be sat here talking to you, Jeff. I'd be on my yacht. You know?
Thank you for those who failed that you know allowed us to talk on this show.
Yeah. So the truth is, you're navigating uncertainty by definition, which means that you have to de-risk it by taking a lot of small bets, doubling down on the stuff that works, and never falling into one of the biggest mistakes corporates make, which is premature scaling. Trying to scale something that has not been validated in the market. Mm. So taking this old sort of business plan mentality of going, well, what's the one right plan? You know, spend a couple of months thinking about it, create the business plan, how much it's going to cost. It's going to be big. It's going to be because it needs to be big for us to care about. It's going to be expensive. And then they roll it out, something that is, you know, rolling out nationally or scaling something that hasn't been validated, doesn't work. And then they get hurt. That's the real danger. But with MDEC, what I love about our partnership with MDEC is they did look outside of Malaysia and say, well, hold on, we've got a vision for what we want to do and drive in Malaysia. Job creation, you know, industry sort of securitization, i.e. this digital adoption. How do we de-risk the future of corporations and industries and employment growth and GDP growth in Malaysia? Mm. So they take that mindset and then they say, well, what are the capabilities needed? What's the proven stuff that has worked? And they looked elsewhere. And that's really where they found us. So they found Rainmaking not only wider in Singapore and in China, but really in our European and US offices. And they said, okay, what have you been doing? And what's your track record? And they look at it and said, okay, so you have a proven methodology of doing this. And what's the best way to get started? And this structured approach of the VIP program.
And there are different ways corporate firms are working. There are different ways with startups and how they work. Why is it important for, you know, these two companies to work together and sort of just see what it brings? Like, why is it important for corporate companies to look into, you know, startups for ideas, for that innovation? Why is this so important?
I mean, there's so many things you can do with startups. So from the stuff that I care about, which is much more the commercial end, like ultimately it's about making money.
It's a business.
Yeah, it's a business. So, you know, it's not a hobby. It doesn't cost a money. That's my golf. But, you know, from tapping into new technologies to tapping into new business model innovation. By the way, just to clear this, business model innovation is a word that gets thrown around a lot. And there's a lot of people that nod in Malaysian. Then I ask them what I might tell me what it means to you. Mm. And then there's silence. So I think it's worth just clarifying what that means. So in this context, in a lot of old industries, every competitor basically had the same business model. And the way they out-competed was on execution. It was like, how do I do more with less? How do I de-risk it? How do I optimize? How do I streamline my ship better than you? Okay? Well, that world has changed. So when we look at the industries, and let's just go to the obvious examples, like Airbnb, hotels. Like Airbnb has now got more rooms than Hilton and Intercontinental combined. Right? So it's completely changed it. WhatsApp to the telco industry, you name it, Uber to taxis, but more importantly to the car manufacturers themselves in the long run. So there's all these different things. Now, Uber, WhatsApp, you know, Dropbox, Airbnb, it's like, did they win because of technology? Is it really their portfolio of patents that's really defensible? Is that, it's a freaking app. Come on. Like today's, I can spin up a team 3 to 6 months, I've built it, it's done. Right? If you have that capability, it's not hard. So the scenario around it is it's not the technology which allowed them to be so disruptive. It's the business model that fundamentally changed the rules of the game for that industry. Now, those are the sort of big bang explosions. The truth is this happens on a much more micro level. So the a lot of disruption innovation is actually unbundled. It's this scenario of like death by a thousand cuts. You know, everyone likes to talk about these stories of the Big Bang, the Ubers, the WhatsApp. Okay, great, fine. But actually, statistically, they're outliers. You know, the truth of the matter is, even if that hasn't happened in the industry yet, doesn't mean you aren't going to die by a thousand cuts, where business model innovation is playing in much more sort of smaller ways. So new ways to access new customers or, you know, the sharing economy or even just quite frankly, marketplaces or crowdfunding, peer-to-peer lending. There's all these different things that are fundamentally changing this. Mm-hmm. And so there's a huge shift in societal changes, and that's something where you can partner up with people who have the capability, startups. You can access to some cool technology, and some of them are genuine technology. So whether it's blockchain, AI, deep machine learning, there are some cool things out there that really do have impacts for certain industries, which are tech-driven. Mm-hmm. But also it's talent. There's a bunch of real things that you can sort of tap into this VC-funded market, collaborate, explore, run a few experiments, get some validation. Once you have it, then scale it. Because big corporates have that scalability by definition. It's like they're born with scale. They have distribution channels. They're operating, in some cases, globally. So if you, as a startup, get to do something with a corporate and it works, bang, it scales even faster than they could do alone. So that's a win-win.
I'm speaking to Jordan Schilf. He's the partner at Rainmaking Innovation, and we'll be right back. BFM 89.9.
Balanced Frank Medium. BFM 89.9.
And we're back with Jordan Schilf. He's the partner at Rainmaking Innovation. Jordan, just before we went for the break, you talked about how corporate firms would try and scale something up that came out from either like an accelerator program or a hackathon and use its corporate muscle to scale it immediately. Is this like a common pitfall or a mistake?
That's a common pitfall. That typically falls into the characterization of internal innovation. Because if you think about the way their process of governance and invest, they don't have stage-gated investment. So it's kind of like, what's the business case? People write the business case. Oh, does it meet our financial hurdle rates? Well, it's got to be this big, otherwise we don't care about it because our P&Ls are like, if it doesn't make 30, 50, 100 million, like, why do we care? So it's big by definition and by design. And then if they decide to do it, it's like, how much is it going to cost? Deploy. And then it's a 2-year, 3-year rollout. They deploy it. And it's like, it's nuts. I met this, okay, true story. So earlier this year, I was talking to a head of digital and a head of IT at a big multinational bank. And I said to him, I said, could you talk me about through some of the new products and projects you've been working on? What are the failures? Oh, no, Jordan, what are you talking about? None of our projects have failed. We've delivered on time, on budget, and to the feature specifications agreed up front. And I'm like, great. Does anyone use it? Does it make you money? Does it create some strategic value or defensibility in some way to your actual business? But that's not what people ask me for. You know? So, you know, in that sense, yes, in prematurely scaling things, that is kind of modus operandi by default, which is, again, this old way of working where in a world which is not volatile and things are certain, makes sense. Because when you have certainty, project management is great because it does de-risk it and it's about smoothing the operations and the process improvement. So bang, you operate, deploy it, nothing's changed, it's great. Unfortunately, when you think that you're certain in the model and you roll something out and it isn't, you've now overinvested in something that hadn't been validated.
Mm.
So the real question is now when you're trying to do anything new, are you really certain?
Yeah.
And in today's world of business models or new tech products and consumer behaviors and accessing new consumers or customer segments themselves, like I think it's nuts to A, believe that you have the right solution from the first idea is the best idea, and secondly, that you should deploy it, you know, at scale. Hmm. So a portfolio approach, doing a lot of little experiments and then allocating more and more money when you have enough evidence to justify further investment. So a bit like the VC analogy, right?
Is it right to think that, you know, large corporate firms are best to equip themselves to go onto this journey by, you know, separating or disrupting their own self? We see how we've spoken to DG and, you know, how they start up with DGX.
Yeah.
And the challenge and the roadmap that they've created, set up a different office in a completely different area altogether, operate like a startup, be agile, be disruptive, and then come back with, you know, a proper viable product or, you know, a proper viable strategy. Is that sort of the right way to approach for large companies who are looking to move quickly? Because the startup scene is just, it's crazy, and it's all about, you know, surviving tomorrow because they just don't have the money like the large corporate firms have.
I think that's one way, and I think that's a way that can work. So for Digi, it makes sense because, you know, the telco business model is imminently going to...
It's going to die.
It's going to die. It's, you know, it's a dumb pipe that won't be able to charge for data for minutes or whatever, right? So they know that, and that happened some years ago. So the need to create entirely new businesses justifies the DigiX strategy. And if you're building what I would call disruptive innovation, which is something entirely new, you know, and you need to do that in a startup-like way to de-risk it and to be super fast, you can't do that in the environment internally. It's like saying you want to grow a plant, but you want to do it without oxygen and sunlight. Doesn't work. So the environment matters. And to change a big behemoth to create the right environment where startup type of activity flourishes is really hard. Mm. And actually, when you need the cash cow to operate, to make the money to fund this stuff, it's like, let it do its own thing. And that's why DigiX's make sense. But it's just one mechanism. And I still think that if you're putting all your bets on DigiX themselves to come up with own startups in their own selves, I think that mm-hmm. is too short. Mm. I think you should be doing, like they are doing, the VIP program, working with other startups, collaborating. I think there's a few things they can be doing. Personally, I have a very strong opinion though. If you really want to do disruptive innovation, so business model innovation-led things, i.e. entirely new, high-growth new business ventures, I don't think this can or should be done internally or, quite frankly, with employees. Main reasons are, it's a bit like, you know, many corporates have come to us in the past years and said, Jordan, can you take our staff and can you train them how to build startups? And it's like, they, you know, with all due respect, they're plenty smart enough, they're plenty creative enough to innovate, and they're great people. But they're giving me, it's like the scenario of like giving me the catering corps and telling me to turn them into Navy SEALs.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, ugh. What I mean by that is you can do it over a many year horizon. But when I compare versus what we would do with our rainmaking ventures where we build startups with some of the most influential companies, the difference here is we provide the best of small. They come with us, we'll work on some ideas together, strategically aligned to the big business, because if it's not strategically aligned, even if it's working, you won't be able to scale it by connecting it, integrating it to the mothership. Has to be strategically aligned, otherwise the corporate immune system will kill it. So once we've got comfort on what that is, we provide proven entrepreneurs. Why? Because the scenario here is, if you give one idea to, say, you know, another, you know, corporate employees on the payroll, even if they're an external innovation lab and they're separate and they've got different, and they've given the mandate, the lip service to innovate and fail fast, I compare them to a team of four to six proven entrepreneurs on our side, like not even comparable. It's the Navy SEALs versus the guys that have turned up day one outside the kitchens and, you know, just put on the beret. Like, it can't compare. Mm. So I'm not going to train people to try and build startups within a corporate context. It's really hard to do. And part of this, because of this lip service aspect, which is if you are on a company payroll, there's a big gulf between, even if you've been trained on how to do lean startup, so you know what you should do. And then you say, okay, the CEO's there and everyone's telling them, fail fast, be entrepreneurial, innovate. And then you watch what they should do versus what they do do. And what they do do versus what they should do is a massive gulf. Why? It's not because they don't have the capabilities or they haven't been trained. It's because they are thinking deep down, consciously or unconsciously, What happens when I do fail? What happens to all the people to me on this project when I kill it, who report to me? What happens to my bonus? What happens to my remuneration? What happens to my prospects in this firm? Will they really reward this failure? And if there is any doubt in that, they will not do it. So the path of emotional least resistance is what all human beings will take. So when you compare that to versus what they should do, the scenario here is if the path of emotional least resistance is not genuinely fail fast, they won't fail fast. So there's this concept around this where it doesn't matter how many times people say it, the lip service versus the company actually rewarding them. So when you sit there, say whether it's an X-like entity, not specific to DGX, but like an X-like entity, there's doing a startup idea, and then 6 months in, 3 months in, they figure out it doesn't really work, it's not really going to deliver what they want. Their resources are better spent elsewhere, so they kill it. Does their parent, does the mothership bonus them for that? Like, literally cash, I don't know, give them a two-week holiday. Do they celebrate them? Does the culture in terms of not what people say, but what behaviors get rewarded? What behaviors get rewarded, not just monetarily, but like through social rewards? Like, do people clap them and high five them? Do people nod them and go, that's awesome what you've done? Because when we do this with, so we've done this before. We spent a couple of years building startup studios or sort of startup builders, company builders, because that was our background within corporates. We won't do anymore. The reason being is the amount of times I had to take a team on stage after 3 or 6 months, they've killed, and you can't tell them to kill their idea. They have to do it. It is not acceptable to have some investment committee or some, you know, exec co come in and say, oh, I think your idea is terrible, I'm going to kill it. Because they don't have the capabilities to judge this early stage stuff, FYI. But besides that, like, that's so demoralizing. It needs to come from the team itself. If the team doesn't have the autonomy to kill their own idea, then you're not really innovating. And even if they do, the scenario here is I used to take these teams, put them on stage to the rest, 80 other people, hold them up and said, guys, listen up. This team has done more to further innovation in the last quarter than any of you. And they're like, what? By killing their idea, they've done more to further innovation. And they go nuts. They're like, they don't understand this. Despite how many months and years the organization, the senior people have been saying, fail fast. So the truth around it is we just don't believe in that anymore. So that's why we provide the proven entrepreneurs. We'll run the startup, but we now connect it using our corporate innovation experience to start with an unfair advantage and not just a blank canvas. Mm. So how do you get the best of big and the best of small? Well, that's our Rainmaking Ventures, and that's where we'll come to you and work on strategic ideas, strategically aligned ideas, but we provide that entrepreneurial muscle, and you allow us to leverage your existing infrastructure and resources. Mm. And that way, we outcompete startups.
And what happens during the VIP program then? Since, you know, it's hard to, like you mentioned, you know, it's hard to train people to get to this, because at the end of the day, they will go back to their mindset of, you know, trying to be safe, trying to protect, you know, themselves. It's how, what goes on to the VIP program then?
Yeah, so VIP is different. I mean, the VIP program is not about, you know, employees trying to build startups. Right? This is really about connecting a growth stage startup to a particular business unit or P&L and saying, okay, how can we connect you to get a win-win for the startup and for you? So the example could be, you know, let's look at some of the examples we're doing here in Malaysia. So Digi has a remit as part of DigiX to generate new revenue streams and new business models. So for them, the pilot is very simple. We're bringing in a advanced agri-tech startup, which is a drone technology, looking at the palm oil plantations to create a sort of plantation management software. The startup has a lot of the tech, but doesn't really have the business model, and they want to extend it. Digi, in order for this to even work, the technology, has to have connectivity. We're in the middle of nowhere, right? So Digi have to provide that connectivity to run these drones and have the connectivity to get real time, to get the analytics, to provide the sort of really smart agricultural solution, smart farming, better yields, reduced cost. You know, it's incredible what they can do. But for this is a really interesting one. For Digi, it's like, okay, we bring the connectivity. We can also do the sales because we have the corporate connections and a trusted brand. The startup provides the bedrock of the technology platform. They co-create the actual end sort of management platform together. That then gets deployed. It gets commercial. It's a new revenue stream. It's a new business model. And that is all about, you know, reducing fertilizer costs, which is the main cost. It's about improving yield. It's improving workflow management. But also there's an assurance angle here. So that's when we look at it and say, crop or hail insurance is a big market, especially for the big players. Mm. So now we connect in one of our insurance partners from our network, and now they've got a completely innovative insurance solution. Because with that data, what they can do for pricing and premiums is something they've never done before. And what they can do on the claims process is something they've never done before. It's like fully automated, it's reduced cost, and it's more accurate. Mm. It's nuts.
And that's the business model innovation then.
So yeah, so that's together where this is a pilot where it's about a business model innovation pilot creating a new business together. This is co-creation. But they're all bringing strengths to the table. So it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. All right. And people can find out more just by going on to mdac.my/VIP. Jordan, it's been a pleasure speaking to
always.
You. We could go on and on and on. But till the next time, I guess. Jordan, thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
And you've been listening to BFM. And remember to check out mdac.my/VIP.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.